God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Businessman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to the Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Well, we have a lot of things we want to cover today. We're going to talk a little bit about the injustice of our Justice Department and also the radical left-wing policies that I think are going to hurt them in November. Take this one, for example. New York voters overwhelmingly reject new Manhattan $15 congestion toll in poll inside the stats. Okay, so what this is like a 15-minute city. It's no different. You know when they're talking about 15-minute cities in England, what they're talking about? They're saying that you'll pay a tax or you'll pay a premium of some sort, a toll tax or a poll tax or a gasoline tax or a credit score tax. You know, that's what the credit score system is all about. Environmental social governance and taxation and control and putting everybody into a box. You need rules and you need permission for just about everything. The things you need permission for today to do certain things. Having a lemonade stand. All of these things require government approval. It should not be that way. That's not liberty. That is not liberty at all. So New York voters overwhelmingly reject this. New York voters overwhelmingly reject having to pay a new $15 congestion toll. So it's about $18 to $20. It's been a while since I've gone and driven through the Lincoln Tunnel, but I remember when it was 12, then 15, then 18, and it must be over 20 now. It's incredibly expensive. So they took a poll out about this, but 63% overwhelmingly oppose this tax. It's basically to put you in your box. It's basically to somehow, you know, New York's been doing a lot with controlling congestion. I thought that $18 toll fees at going through the Lincoln and the Holland tunnels would be enough. Going through the Midtown Tunnel, every tunnel that goes in, every tunnel or bridge that goes into New York City has a massive toll. And, you know, and so, yeah, I can understand a little bit of that to just curb the flow because there's just too much congestion on a small island. I got it. Too many high rises, too many people wanting to have deliveries made there. I get all that. And you say, okay, well, an urban planner has their hands full. But now you get the idea that they're doing this not in the name of congestion, but in the name of climate. You know, you go through Manhattan, it's no longer nearly as busy as it used to be. Everybody's moved out. It's becoming overridden, really, by a bunch of criminals that are out in the street because they don't want to ever lock them up. and get them off the street. But this is no more, no less than a tax. That's what ESG and climate is all about. It's just another revenue stream for who? For who? The government. And so they're going to basically deny you something that you had every right to. They're going to take it away from you and say, if you want it, you're going to have to pay for it. That's a freedom that you no longer have. They're going to just, that's what ESG, that's what environmental social governance is all about. It's about taking things away from you so you can't pollute the earth. In the name of earth pollution, in the name of climate, they want to deny you your right to access anything if you have the means and the money to do it. If you want to fly private, you could fly private. But no, now if you want to fly private, you're going to pay a tax. You're going to pay a toll. Usually that would happen when some rich guy would buy a bridge and say, hey, look, there are other ways to get to the other side of that water. But if you want to use my bridge, I invested the money to build it. And if you want to use it, it's your privilege. It's your choice. If you want to save yourself 25 minutes going the long way, you're going to go ahead and pay me a toll. And at some point, the toll's either worth it or not worth it. And that's called capitalism. And the same thing, you know, those laws and those issues became complex. This is just one mere example, but there's probably thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of examples of this. I'm not breaking the mold here. But what I am going to say is, you know, a real complexity was utilities and infrastructure and internet and fiber optics and copper and cable. And that's why you would have one company that would invest in digging up the trenches and putting in the cable to run for the internet and the electricity and other things. So then you say, well, this one company got the rights to do it. Now they have a monopoly. But there are strings. There's rules. You can't just be unfair with your monopoly. But we will give you 15, 25, 20 years, whatever, you know, of free reign, no competition, so long as you don't gouge or price out of the market people's ability to gain your access to that service. Because the city is saying something to the effect, we need our people to be connected to the internet. We need our citizens to have electricity and heat and things like that. For the common good of mankind, right? We don't want to have deaths. If you cut off people's heat and electricity, they're going to end up in the hospital. It's going to be over, you know. So there's all kinds. It's going to disrupt education. It's going to disrupt the future of America. So there's a thousand reasons why you have to do certain things in government that you may not do in the real world or in your own personal life. And one of them is, you know, you don't want to have 15 different companies digging up 15 different trenches and ruining the earth. And you don't want to give license to just one without some strings attached. But these monopolies, when it comes to like a bridge, yeah, there might be some regulations to it, but for the most part, capitalism. Someone's willing to pony up the money and take the risk, they're likely going to make some money. But that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is that for over a century, in New York City, people have been able to go to one from one borough to the other, and the most that they would ever pay would be a bridge toll. But they could get, if I'm in the Upper East Side and I want to go to the West Village or Chelsea, or go over to Tribeca or Mary Hill or Central Park West or go to Central Park from the Village, I shouldn't have to pay a toll. And the unintended consequences of that are going to be people that are going to be living in certain areas in weird ways there's going to be all kinds of interesting and creative ideas on how to skirt around that. So I don't know. It's a very interesting consequence here, but they don't want it. The reason why I think it's relevant, though, in this national conversation is because of the election. Again, I'm going to say it again. I think that Trump might be picking a guy like Lee Zeldin as his VP pick. Now, I could definitely be wrong on this one. This is just a guess. But I've heard a couple of people talk about it, and I thought it was a pretty good idea. If Trump is earnestly going to make a run, he has said it. When he was outside of that bodega in the Bronx, he said, I'm going to make a run on New York. Trump always does what he says. He just always does. And, you know, Trump always looks at himself as a New Yorker first from Queens. And that's where he got his chops. That's where he made his money. New York, Atlantic City. Then he went out to Vegas. But it was always in Vegas, it was New Yorker mob, New Yorkers. So that started Vegas. And then you go down to Florida, Miami. It's a bunch of New Yorkers going down to Miami. So it's a New York thing. You'd have to be on the East Coast to really appreciate what I'm telling you about. A lot of West Coasters. I don't get the West Coast that much. You know, I love it out there, though. When I was out in L.A., I thought it was great. I was impressed. I was surprised how much I liked it, actually. So, yeah, kudos to you on the West. But I'm an East Coaster, and I understand the culture here. But and I like the time zone. I like being 3 hours ahead instead of 3 hours behind. But, yeah, the culture is definitely different. And so Trump, I think, in his gut, feels like he deserves. There's no reason why it is that a New Yorker would vote for Joe Biden. In Trump's gut, that's the way he sees New York. And guess what? They don't have an election fraud apparatus built in New York. They do and they don't. There is fraud in New York, trust me. But not on the federal presidential election side. No one's ever really needed to put an apparatus into place in Jersey, in New York. But this year, they're going to have to. Because, and this is going to cause some agita to the Democrats. Because they're, I think this is what happened with Hillary in 2016. They didn't feel they needed to cheat in the states that they lost, in the blue wall states. I think that they just thought the polls indicate there's no chance they're going to lose. Why take the risk? Because every time you rob a bank, you risk getting arrested and getting thrown in jail. So the way the election fraudsters are with these midterm elections, they're not a hill worth dying on. That's what it's about. That's why you don't see the same level of fraud, nor do you see the same outcomes. Now, we did with Trump because they needed to impeach Trump. So they took out all the stops in 2018. And that's how Nancy Pelosi became speaker. And Kirstjen Nielsen dropped the ball, and that's why she got fired. Recall? Do you recall? She got fired right after the 2018 election because the Department of Homeland Security was responsible for free and fair elections. And remember all those Republican congressmen in Orange County, California? All won. Every one of the Republicans who won, five of them, all lost a week later after the count finally trickled in. And there was a couple of seats in Texas that happened the same way, and New Mexico and Arizona and all bunch of places. There was, with the way Trump was treating America and it was rising, there was no reason why it is that Trump lost at the House in the midterms. No reason. And once that happened, he got impeached, like lickety-split, over a perfectly good call using that gay guy, Eric Ciaramella, and his lover, Sean Misko, who work as national security under Obama, then infiltrated the Trump presidency and worked hand in glove with Adam Schiff, the most corrupt politician on the planet, who's likely going to beat Steve Garvey for the Senate seat and become the next senator of California, taking over Dianne Feinstein's seat. How do you like them apples? But that's what happened from 2018 to 2020. We got to get our heads straight. The Democrats are pure evil. They hate America. Just look at them waving their Ukrainian flags the other day with that vote to give Zelensky the slush money that's going to actually find its way back to politicians in a campaign year. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So here, we got this. For decades, legacy global elite media rejected censorship while they enjoyed an unquestionable monopoly on information. The fact that the legacy global elite now advocates censorship is proof that X and Elon Musk represent the most important source of truth and information in the world. So I actually wrote that in response to X's fight in Brazil and Australia and everywhere else that we have globalism. The global leader, the guy in Brazil who rigged the election to beat out Bolsonaro, the Trump of the tropics. Yeah, he's a globalist, socialist pig. And then you have Australia and New Zealand. They're part of our Five Eyes partnership, along with the UK and France and the United States. And they're all globalists. They were all in on the impeachment hoax. They were all in on the Russian hoax. They were all in on all of the election rigging. And guess what they did? They blamed Russia. Russia. They blame Russia. So we also want to talk a little bit about the courtroom in New York. So Simon Atiba says, breaking in the courtroom, bias against Trump or just the law. Judge Merchant, who's getting rich, by the way, off this case, just got into a heated argument with Donald Trump attorney Todd Blanche over his gag order after Alvin Bragg's team asked the judge to fine Trump $1,000 for each violation on Truth Social. They also asked the judge to order Trump to remove those posts, about 10 posts. Prosecution claimed that the posts in question could pose a very real threat to the proceedings. One of the posts in contention was when Trump quoted Fox News and Jesse Waters, who said, they are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge, but they added to get on the Trump jury. Prosecution claimed that Trump was not quoting Waters because he added his own words, and that was a violation of the gag order not to attack the witnesses. Well, Trump was basically explaining the context of what Jesse Waters said. This is how nitpicky they are, the court and anyone involved with the trial. So attack the witnesses, the court, or anyone with the trial. Jesse Waters' post on X was the same as Trump's post, although it's unclear whether he made the post long after his show or before Trump quoted him. So they're getting into all the little nitpicky stuff. And this is the former president of the United States in an election year. He is the front runner, winning in every poll, and they want to silence him. You know, Jesse Waters made some very good points. Let's take a listen when he was talking about this. So to put it into context. Oh, and you're going to hear some audio from that vile criminal and liar and perjurer who did jail time, Michael Cohen.
The Star Witness has a podcast and gets to rip Trump a new one, but Trump's gagged.
He put out another post that attacked me. I'll tell you how I would act on it if I was the judge. I would turn around and I would say, Donald, grab your toothbrush, grab your hair, and report to 500 Pearl Street, the criminal court, because you're spending the night in the tombs downstairs. And you'll spend every day. We'll bring you up for the trial, but afterwards, you're not going back to your triplex. You're going downstairs to the pokey until you learn how to act like a human being. That's what I would do.
The star witness who went to prison for lying is torturing Trump and bossing the judge around. And if Trump says anything, jail. Stormy Daniels, porn star, who extorted Trump and owes him 600 G's in legal fees, and her attorney, Michael Avenatti, in prison for extortion. Everyone in this case is either a liar, a porn star, or an extortionist, or all of the above. They're the faces of a case that's never been tried before in the history of the United States. Their argument, are you ready, is that Trump should have used donor money to stop a woman from shaking him down and then file the ransom with the FEC. That's a great way of protecting your family. No one would ever find out. This wasn't campaign business. This was personal. Campaign finance law specifically states candidates cannot use campaign funds for an expense that would exist anyway, even if it benefits the campaign. His lawyer paid Stormy, and after the campaign was over, the money was reimbursed and booked as a legal expense. You can't use campaign funds for personal matters, and now you can't use personal funds for personal matters during a campaign? So I guess the real crime is that Trump ran for president and beat Hillary. Prosecutors are arguing that it's a felony to quiet rumors about your personal life. A lot of presidents have made tabloid rumors disappear. Bill Clinton had a war room combating bimbo eruptions. Senator Ted Kennedy settled a case with Mary Jo's family after he left her for dead in the waters of Chappaquiddick. Alvin Bragg's arguing that Senator Kennedy should have used campaign funds and filed it with the FEC. That's nonsense. That was personal. Biden's former prosecutor told the jury today that Trump was trying to influence his own election. Oh, my gosh. Trump's defense attorney told the jury trying to influence the election is called democracy. There's nothing wrong with a non-disclosure agreement. Can you believe the Democrats still can't get over the 2016 election? It's now a crime to beat Hillary. The squad admitted it's political, saying, you know, if Trump had just been impeached, we wouldn't have had to put him in jail.
I go back to the responsibility of Congress here, because had the Senate actually gone through with the impeachment of Donald Trump, we would not be in this situation.
Yeah, right. That was a totally fraudulent impeachment. We are not, we are in a banana republic, people. And shame on the Democrats. Shame on the Democrats who can't see the forest from the trees. Shame on the Democrats. You don't have to like Trump, but at least call the truth what it is. I mean, I don't mind having a debate over the truth. And what I might think is true and what the Democrat might think is true might be two different things. But, you know, with regard to issues like abortion or other topics like that, where you can come to, you can, you're, it's a certain kind of interpretation. But when you see things so black and white as injustice or selective justice or not lady blind justice, but the opposite of that, selective justice, political prosecution, election interference, when you're caught red-handed, when you have illegals coming through getting arrested for rape and then flipping people off with the finger and getting out the next day. I mean, it's just insane. The same Antifa kind of monsters or Black Lives Matter people are doing the exact opposite of what they promised. Black Lives Matter never helped the black community. Antifa supports bigger government. They support government control. They support fascism, yet they call themselves anti-fascists. And the same thing really holds true with these college campuses. But before we move on to that, Simon Atebo goes, I'm not a lawyer, so kindly help me here. The gag order issued by Judge Juan Merchant prohibits Trump from discussing witnesses, among other people. However, these witnesses are still able to appear on podcasts and cable news shows to criticize him without consequence. If Trump responds to their criticism, he is violating the gag order. Additionally, they can freely slander or attack his own witnesses without facing any restrictions, as there is no gag order imposed on them. My question is, since I'm so new to the legal system, how's that a fair system? How's that not seen as election interference, as Trump is alleging? How is that not dictatorship? This guy's from Africa who wrote that. So, in response to what I just read, J.D. Sharp writes, it's not fair. It is dictatorship. It's a tool to prevent their corruption from being exposed. Namely, number one, the head prosecutor was in Biden's DOJ. The judge's daughter worked for Kamala, receiving money from Schiff and brought in $100 million since indictment. And judge should be recused via New York law. Yeah, of course. All right. So when the presiding judge is corrupt, all rules get thrown out of the window. Bought and paid for, Juan Merchant. That was a meme. Another meme says, interesting. All the horrific things Democrats said would happen if I became president, and there's a picture of Trump, are happening right now under Joe Biden. World War III, political persecution or prosecution. Yeah, it's all happening. All right, I got a couple of things for you about the Columbia situation. So we're going to go ahead and take a listen to this. This was pretty good. This was a pretty good clip. I liked what this guy had to say about the Columbia students. There's also a lot of comment or commentary on this, and that is, who's funding it? Is it Soros? Who is funding this? The what's happening on our campuses? So they've already passed a new law, a restriction in Colombia. And you're going to see this be very significant, actually. And the reason why is because you're going to find that these Colombian students aren't taught to lead. Number one, what are they being taught? We need to know. Now we need to know, because this has gotten to be a national security issue. The second question is, why should I be paying for their tuition? Again, why in the world are we paying for student loan forgiveness when the students whose loans we are paying for in that forgiveness as middle class taxpaying citizens? They're being taught an ideology, and they're being indoctrinated to basically be a thorn in our side and to ruin our way of life and to instigate World War III, because they're so moronically stupid that they're supporting terrorism. Hamas is a terror group, as was and is Hezbollah. Hezbollah is mostly Shia, which is dominated by Iran. It's an Iranian proxy group. Hamas is a Palestinian group. They're Sunni. They're Arabs. And so you got Hamas, Sunni Arabs, Hezbollah, Shia Arabs. And they both have one cause, to destroy Israel and the United States of America. And both are financed in partnership by the Palestinian Authority, who we give money to, and Iran, who we've given money to and relieved sanctions for. So Trump understood this. It was ones and zeros. It was binary. It was easy. See, that's the trouble with that whole gender thing, right? It's binary, folks. It's binary. It's a man, it's a woman, right? It's a man, it's a woman. Am I right? Biological male, biological female. Boom. Simple. Mother Nature's quite simple and complex, but simple. Let's keep it simple, stupid. KISS method, right? The KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. So let's just keep it simple. But no, we have to pull a Jonathan Gruber. We have to pull that Jonathan Gruber act, right? Jonathan Gruber, what did Jonathan Gruber say? You know, it's about time I play this clip. Jonathan Gruber. Let's see if I could find this. Right here, I'm gonna pull this up. Let's see if I could find it. Okay, see how long this is. Yeah, let's see if I can get this one.
There's a third video that emerged today featuring MIT economist Jonathan Gruber, one of the architects of Obamacare, suggesting, in his view...
We just tax the insurance companies. They pass on...
Right here.
We just tax the insurance companies.
Right
Let's
here.
Play Let's that see. Sound.
We just tax the insurance companies. They pass on higher prices. That offsets the tax break we get. It ends up being the same thing. It's a very clever, you know, basic exploitation of the lack of economic understanding of the American voter.
I want to get your reaction to that, Senator.
Well, my reaction
Well, he basically said, we're going to depend on the stupidity of the American voter. Let's just play the whole
thing. It's just, you can't do it politically. You just literally cannot do it.
This is about Obamacare.
Okay. Transparent financing. And let's have transparent financing, also transparent spending. I mean, this bill was written in a tortured way to make sure CBO did not score the mandate as taxes. If CBO scored the mandate as taxes, the bill dies. Okay? So it's written to do that. In terms of risk-rated subsidies, if you had a law which said healthy people are going to pay in, it made explicit that healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. Okay, just like the people, lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. And, you know, it's the second best argument. Look, I wish Mark was right. We can make it all transparent. But I'd rather have this law than not. So it's kind of like his reporter story. You know, yeah, there's things I wish I could change, but I'd rather have this law than not.
So first of all, you haven't publicly commented on this so far. Do you stand by the comments in that video?
The comment in the video were made at an academic conference. I was speaking off the cuff.
And another message that you wrote, John Kerry, former Mueller, more likely staff.
John Kerry.
Came up with a great substitute idea. They said, look, what you economics nerds want to do is you want to say that for people with expensive health insurance plans, they will no longer get a 40% tax break. What if we instead just levied a 40% tax on the insurance companies that sell these terrible, expensive Cadillac plans? We said, well, that's pretty much the same thing, but why does it matter? We said, you'll see. And they proposed it, and that passed. Because American voters are too stupid to understand the difference. So basically...
So I was speaking off the cuff, and I...
Until a second Massachusetts hero arose, John Kerry. And John Kerry said, no, we're going to tax your health insurance. We're going to tax those evil insurance companies. We're going to impose a tax that if they sell health insurance that's too expensive, we're going to tax them. And conveniently, the tax rate will happen to be the marginal tax rate under the income tax code. So basically, it's the same thing. We just tax the insurance companies. They pass it on higher prices. That offsets the tax break we get. It ends up being the same thing. It's a very clever, you know, basic exploitation of the lack of economic understanding of the American voter. Okay.
Conference. I was speaking off the...
So this is an MIT professor, Jonathan Gruber, right? Goes back about what? Since it's around 2010. And he was speaking before Penn University, you know, the Biden Center, Penn, the Ivy League, right? MIT's just across the street from Harvard. So, you know, it's just all a bunch of liberal elites that depend on the stupidity. And by the way, taxing the rich. The Republicans know that's a bad, because everything trickles down. You tax the rich, it's only going to inflate the prices. if you tax the rich, it's going to cost more to produce the product, and the rich is always going to get whatever they want. The people that control the equity in the world are always going to get rich off of the people. And if it costs more to sell a widget, they'll just sell it for more. They have a monopoly. Why not? And it's always going to come out of your pocket at the end of the day. Taxing the rich is always going to be a tax on the middle class. Always. The Democrats never, ever understand that. The other thing that Democrats never, ever understand is that rich people have more ways to hide their revenue through equitable investments, infrastructure, through opportunity costs, through offshore investments, global markets, you name it. Global residencies, tax shelters, all kinds of things. And so, and they have a team of lawyers and experts that they have access to that know every single little loophole on the planet. The best lawyers and best accounting firms know every single loophole to benefit the rich, but not you. So come on. Taxing the rich is just a way to redistribute wealth from the middle class to the rich and beyond and to the government. So this was Jonathan Gruber talking about Obamacare in 2010. But the point that I'm making is just that. It is an atrocity. So what they try to do is they try to do this with, they try to torture it, make it more complicated and depend on the stupidity. And it's not the conservative voter. It's the liberal voter, the stupidity of the liberal voter. Because the liberals were the only ones that bought that BS. Okay? So that's their attitude right there in a nutshell, personified. And so what I'm saying is that's what they're doing with sex. That's what they're doing with climate. That's what they're doing with all these things. They're making it more complex than it needs to be. So I want to hear this. So getting back to the school is teaching Marxism. They always get the conservative tax dollars to pay for either their abortions. Planned Parenthood was getting taxes from the federal government, which included conservative tax dollars and liberal tax dollars. And yet 100% of those funds that they were getting came from a mix, like mostly probably conservative tax dollars. So you're paying for your adversary. You're paying for the organization that you reject and object to. And so that's kind of sad in and of itself. Well, they're doing the same thing, with student loan forgiveness. You're going to pay for the tyrants that support Hamas and terrorist groups that are all about groupthink and too stupid to know better at these universities. You're going to pay for you're going to forgive their loan debt. You're going to pay for that. And that's only going to strengthen and embolden your adversaries, the army that's voting for people like Joe Biden to keep the money train and gravy trains running on time. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, a friend of mine, he's telling me about his brother, or the defense contractor. He paid about $190,000 in taxes. And I said, does he sell that bag of bolts, Congress, for $90,000? We're in a cannibalistic economy, is what we're in right now. And the engine is the ability to print money and steal from the future. So whoever benefits from this process, is the one that can set themselves up and their families. And it's usually these politicians.
Well, that's called sleight of hand accounting and that's sleight of hand accounting. So that 90,000, that was a bag of bolts that Waltz held up, and he held it up. I think it was Waltz, but he held it up. And or it was either Walter McCall. I think it was one of the two. In any case, $90,000 bag of bolts. And you say, wow, that's ridiculous. But you know what they do? They end up selling like whatever it is, the helicopter or whatever it is that those bolts are used to make. They'll sell that, you know, they'll sell other parts at like that are more expensive at a very competitive rate. But then they'll jack up a like a $100 bag of bolts, or not even $100, $50 bag of bolts. You could buy those at Home Depot for probably six, but say they're custom. So a $50 bag of bolts for $90,000. But those bolts are used, like there's like 10 bags of bolts in every in the construction of every plane or every helicopter or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And so when you add that up, it's like $9 million per vehicle per project. And it adds up. That's where they're getting you, because the accounting would never look at the bolts. So it's like, okay, we're not going to look at the bolts. That's only $90,000. That's a small figure, right? Because $90,000 on the grand scheme of things is a small number. But when you realize that you're buying a bag of bolts with $90,000, now that's where people do the oversight. They miss it. That's accounting sleight of hand. It's what they're doing there.
Well, like I said, like all these people you're seeing at the all these colleges, it seems like all these uproars are happening at the colleges, and the colleges are being funded by foreign aid. The money,
oh, totally
goes out, you know, and it's these kids are they're indoctrinating the younger generation.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a huge part of it, and that should be talked about, but. I got news for you. The reason why the universities are so twisted up over these issues isn't because they're not smart enough to know right and wrong. It isn't because they drank the super liberal Kool-Aid and that they've been indoctrinated themselves and that they're just moronically stupid. They're not. They're not
they're
at all.
Their,
I went to listen to this. I went to a private invite only speech in Washington, D.C., which I had access to. And it was about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And it was a guy named Ben Freeman. You can look him up. Ben Freeman and university funding. And look at the name Qatar, Q-A-T-A-R, Qatar, Qataris. And some people call it Qatar, but it's Qatar. Everybody was thinking it was going to be Russia. It wasn't Russia. Russia wasn't even on the top five list. It was China, Qatar. And Qatar is, okay, do you know what Qatar is? Qatar is the Hamas headquarters, meaning that Hamas lives in Qatar. That's what Qatar is it is the home base for Hamas. Okay. So, and this was 4 years ago that Ben Freeman gave a speech, a private speech, but a lot of media picked it up. So you'll find it if you Google that. And it will be Qatar was one of the biggest financiers. There was a legal case going on at Texas A&M. There was plenty of cases going on at all these different Ivy League universities. And so the point that I'm making is that Qatar and is connected with Hamas. They are pro-Hamas, and they're the ones financing these universities. And that's why the universities are complicit in this message. And the organization that's behind it. So people want to know, is it Soros? Who is it that's funding this madness? Who's funding the squad?
It's you and me.
Yeah. Well, we're ultimately funding it, but Qatar's also donating money to these universities.
We are Congress. We're the ones who fund Congress.
Yeah, but Qatar's getting their oil money. So you could also look at they have refineries in Qatar. So for example, you could also look at Biden's economic or green policies. So it's the green initiatives that are enriching the Arab countries that hate America. So when you look at the squad, you look at the squad as being pro-Hamas, and you look at the squad as being pro-green. Just look at what Ocasio-Cortez said about the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal was all about financing the Muslim and Arabs that hate America. But it's not linear. It's not like A to B. It's sort of A to D, and there's a whole bunch of things in between. So if I support the Green Deal, I could also make the argument that what Ocasio-Cortez was really saying when Bernie Sanders stood beside her talking about trees and environment is, if they were really speaking truth serum, right, they would be saying, we want to support Arabs around the country and the refugee crisis for slave labor, and we want to have death to Israel and death to America. That's really what the Green Initiative was about, in terms of empowering Arab states so that they could wage wars against Israel and America. So just like the environmental social governments is about taxing the middle class, these green initiatives are not just about one thing. They're about a lot of things. One of them is geopolitics in the Middle East region. Another might be about Russia. You know, by going green increases the price of oil per barrel, which makes Russia rich. Trump has made that quite clear on his campaign trail.
That's why they don't like Trump.
Yes, exactly.
All of this spending comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah, but we have to look at things, and we have to open our mind and say, when they're talking about green, what are they really talking about? And it depends on who's. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, Rob. It also depends on who is giving the speech, because if Ocasio-Cortez or Ilhan Omar or someone like that is given that speech, she's probably talking about financing anti-Israel forces by when she talks about green energy. But if you're somebody else talking about green energy, you might be talking about global initiatives like controlling populations and slave labor. See, so it really depends. If it's Klaus Schwab talking about green, it's probably about moving populations around and slave labor and corporate interests and BlackRock interests. But if it's Ocasio-Cortez or Ilhan Omar, it's probably talking about Middle East Arabs hating on Israel and the United States when they're talking about green.
Well, the American people better get their wits together with them, because these people are using your country for collateral. These turncoats, because that's what we call them out here now. Like this Mike Johnson, he's a turncoat.
Right.
All these people, they are printing money to a tune of where we can't even service it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a really dumb liberal that was on Twitter, and she was saying, just print more money. I think it was a Canadian. Print more money, and that'll cause the inflation to go away. Just print all the money and pay off the debt, and we'll be debt free, and we won't have to pay any interest. And she didn't get the idea that that's the reason why you have inflation, is you're printing too much money.
They're using your country for collateral.
Right. Absolutely.
Your state, your national park.
Yep.
Your farm.
We got to run. We got to roll.
See you later.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye. Wow. I can't believe the time. Get carried away a little bit on some of these things. All right. So I got off on that Jonathan Gruber thing. I want to play this clip, though, about the college. This is good.
So how many of these people were not Columbia students? And who's organizing this? They all have the same tent. They have the same clothing. So who's organizing this?
Oh, that would be George Soros and company. But I'll tell you why Congress is getting involved. This is yet just another chapter in the long narrative espoused by the far side of the Democratic Party about oppressors versus the oppressed. It started with Black Lives Matter. Then it became migrants at the border. And now it's the Palestinians versus the Israelis. The far left side of the Democratic Party likes to, as Maria, you will have noted many times, divide and conquer.
That's right.
If you can try to prove that there is a group that's being oppressed, then there is a need for the Democratic Party to come in and defend that group. Yeah. It gives them purpose. It justifies big government. It justifies what they're doing. I find it despicable. I hope that we will eventually get to a point where this narrative winds itself down and it's over. But unfortunately, we are in the thick of it right now.
I totally agree. It's this division strategy. Just divide all of us into different groups to try to overtake and dominate those groups. Now, the New York Post is reporting that none of the nearly 230 protesters arrested at Columbia University and New York University campuses will face any criminal charges. The White House is defending the right to peaceful protest, but condemning the calls for violence and anti-Semitism seen on campus demonstrations. Watch this.
He's, of course, aware of the...
Well, it's ridiculous, right? Absolutely ridiculous. All right. Well, I got something else for you. I promised you yesterday we wanted to talk about the homeless thing. This was actually pretty good two clips that we're not going to have too much time getting to, but we'll play this at Ketanji Brown Jackson clip. Believe it or not, I actually liked her questions on this, but I thought they were very interesting.
Can you answer why? Why is it not? Justice Kagan has laid out one of the essential problems here, which is that you're making a distinction between status and conduct. Okay, we see that. And you keep saying this is conduct. Can you explain why?
The actus reus element, that's exactly what was missing in Robinson, and that's what we have here. And that's why that law was so unique.
Now
it's
I'm
a very
cut,
so
cut,
it seems to me that Robinson actually hurts you and not
really
helps you in the following sense. City, for very, rational reasons, has determined that when people eat outdoors, it creates problems with trash and rodents and the like, and so it bans eating in public places, and it punishes violators. Now, just as here, that seems generally fine because most people have restaurants that they can go to, most people have houses that they can eat in, but some people don't have that option. They have to eat in public, because they're unhoused and they can't afford to go to a restaurant. So is your argument, same result, no Eighth Amendment problem, no problem with the city banning eating in public, even though that's a public function, even though that's a human necessity that everyone engages in, and really what's happening is you're only punishing certain people who can't afford to do it privately?
Well, it sounds like I take for a moment that you're not saying the law draws lines on any sort of irrational basis or any equal protection.
No, the city has
issue.
A perfectly rational
and,
basis. When people eat in public, yes. There's trash, there are rodents, there are problems. So the city says what we're going to do is we're going to say no eating in public. What I'm concerned about from your argument is the suggestion, you call it conduct, I appreciate that. But what we have happening in operation is that people who are able to afford doing this thing that's a basic human need privately are okay. They're not punished for it. But people who don't have any other option or opportunity except for to do it in public are the ones who are being targeted by this statute. So,
yeah, it's quite interesting. If I find myself at a food truck, I have to sit down somewhere and figure out where to eat it. But because I have a house and whatever... and I have an alternative means, they don't look at me as the same as the other. That was kind of interesting. This is another interesting one right here. This is Sotomayor.
It prohibits you criminalizing homelessness, right? So what you do is say only homeless people who sleep outdoors will be arrested. That's the testimony of your chief of police, two or three officers, which is if you read the crime, it's only stopping you from sleeping in public if you, for the purpose of maintaining a temporary place to live. And the police officers testified that that means that if a stargazer wants to take a blanket or a sleeping bag out at night to watch the stars and falls asleep, you don't arrest them. You don't arrest babies who have blankets over them. You don't arrest people who are sleeping on the beach, as I tend to do. If I
You know, so that was a really good point that she made. And you get to where she's going. We're out of time. You've been listening to The Scott Adams Show. Please make a donation over at MAGAPAC.org to keep The Scott Adams Show commercial free. Use Red State as your promo code over at MyPillow.com. We'll see you next time on the radio. Bye-bye, everybody.